We'll go ahead and have our first speaker come on up, talking about regional services in the research context. So looking forward to hearing your talk. Please come up. Yes.
Well, good morning. My name is Emily Elias. I'm the Deputy Director of the Southwest Climate Hub. And I'm only marginally more nervous giving this talk now that the first national program leader for the Climate Hub happens to be in the back of the room. So, but I think I'm gonna push through. It'll be okay. So I'm going to talk about the OCA Climate Hubs. And just by show of hands, who's heard of the Climate Hubs? Okay, so almost everybody's heard of the National Climate Hub Network. That's good. That makes me happy. Just as a quick introduction then, the hubs were formed in February 2014. We were formed in a regional context. Seven regions across the United States, because climate effects to agriculture are thought to be regional in the future. But we have 10 hubs. The reason for that is that three supporting hubs were formed at the same time, one in Davis, California to help deal with specialty crops, one in the Northern Forest that was already doing some adaptation work with foresters there, and one in Puerto Rico that has been very busy lately dealing with the impacts of hurricanes in Puerto Rico. It's been extreme events have sort of taken over some of the work of the climate hubs lately. The hubs were formed to help farmers, ranchers, and foresters adapt to the impacts of climate change. And that's maybe not a popular storyline within the administration of the federal government at this point. So we're fortunate, and I'll tell you why we're fortunate within that context. So today, I'm going to talk about the hubs that are administered by the Agricultural Research Service. The ARS is really the branch of the USDA that deals with research, if you're not familiar with the ARS. And I know five of the hubs, although it looks like four, Davis itself is an ARS-administered hub as well. Five of the hubs are administered through the ARS. And what I mean by administered is that the funding comes through ARS research. We're within an ARS research unit. The directors are ARS, they're scientists, all of them, although some of them don't have scientist appointments, although I do. So that is a good thing in some ways, in that it provides a level of security that some of the partner agencies that we work with didn't have, that were authorized by Congress, for example. So we're really part of the USDA and part of the ARS, which is helpful. So functionally, we work at this interface between science and research and services, and this is very similar, of course, to cooperative extension, what extension does. We were set up to do this within ARS, and it's sort of an iterative interpretation and delivery, but I think what's really important to say about this evolved from the Climate Science Centers, and that is the idea of knowledge co-production. So this idea of just going out and telling people what they should do over and over again without taking a moment to actually listen is not an effective model. And so we're really trying to do knowledge co-production and get more into listening to what producers have to say and then taking that back to the ARS research scientists. When the hubs were set up in 2014, I was lucky to be one of the people involved at that point too. So I've seen them evolve over time. And we had seven functional areas originally. Fortunately, those have become synthesized. We do research. Our fellows do research, and I do research, but for the most part, what we're set out to do is science translation and information synthesis. So taking the research of others and translating that for people on the ground. We also do a lot of tool development and technology transfer, and then probably most importantly, stakeholder outreach and education with that co-production component to it that I mentioned. So what's the challenge? The challenge is that ARS is historically a science-based organization. We're a research-based organization, and we're trying to delve into something that's very different. We don't have a lot of experience in the services industry, and that's what it is. It's complicated. It takes a lot of work. And so that's the challenge. We are, you know, we're in the George Washington Carver building. We're very much a science-based organization. But there's an opportunity here, and as a new program, the Climate Hubs, since they're only 3 years old, I really feel like they're in their infancy, have this opportunity to chart an effective path forward within a research context and very strongly within a research background. in partnership with some of our cooperative extension partners. And one of the first things that we did was actually fund extension to help go out and do some of this work, because we recognize that we're a bunch of scientists and don't have these skills. We're lucky to be able to draw on a few examples of climate services and other federal agencies. A good example would be the NOAA RESAs. Another would be the Department of Interior Climate Science Center. So other agencies have done this before, and we can learn from what they've done. So how do we deal with this challenge? The first one was to just acknowledge that we're a research organization and try to understand the regional science priorities. So within the national programs, there are about 20 national programs within ARS. So understanding their research priorities and how those relate to climate services. Within the USDA, USDA agencies were basically taxed or put money in to support the climate hub. So it's not just ARS and Forest Service. It was Risk Management Agency, Farm Services Agency, and others. So understanding their research needs and is important. We work with a lot of partner organizations, so understanding their science priorities and knowledge and the work that they're doing is also important. And then finally, each hub has a person working as an author on the national climate assessment in the food or agriculture part of the national climate assessment. So understanding science priorities through syntheses is another way we do that. Throughout this talk, I'm going to give a few examples, little stories to break it up a bit. So the first thing the hubs did was pull together vulnerability assessments. And I think in this context, we learned some regional science priorities by working with the other USDA agencies. They wrote part of this vulnerability assessment, so we were able to learn from APHIS their concerns about insects and what might happen as the climate warms related to those, that sort of example. So it was really effective to do that for us, to learn about those science needs. So we understand our research context, where we're coming from, but also we understand the need to communicate this climate information via engagement activities, producer field days, also via assessments. We learned what we don't know from our vulnerability assessments, particularly related to, I think, for the Southwest pollinators and insects. It's a little bit of a concerning area for me. That's what keeps me up at night. Also, learning what some of our USDA program agencies need in terms of climate information is something that was important in being able to provide that to them. So an example, a good example of how this worked well was we held some drought workshops. Drought has been a big issue in the southwestern United States over the last few years. And we worked with the National Drought Mitigation Center, and we got some stakeholder feedback. And that feedback was that the drought monitor wasn't characterizing the area very well. And so they needed more rainfall information. And luckily, serendipitously, the Farm Services Agency happened to be in the room at the time. They were very interested in the COCORAS network, which is a rain gauge network that some of the people creating the drought monitor use. So anyway, the long story short, we ended up installing 186 new precipitation gauges with some of the farmers and ranchers to increase that information that goes into the drought monitor. So bringing one and two together, really building these science to services pathways, we try to match the science expertise to the information needs, of course. We work on synthesizing and translating and communicating and educating to regional producers, and we also work with extension audiences. We've created a Southwest Climate Extension Network. We didn't really create it. We got a NIFA grant and helped them create it, frankly, to provide information. But also, again, this is a knowledge co-production area where we hope that we're learning from them about how to better serve their needs through research priorities. And then ultimately, if we do this well, we hope that we can serve as a regional mechanism for science applications and technology transfer and implementation assistance into the future related to a warming climate and changing precipitation patterns and some more extreme events that we've been seeing lately. This year alone, I think there have been 18 over $1 billion extreme events in the country, a lot more than we've experienced in the past. So a couple examples of the science to services. We have hosted the Southern Plains Climate Hub. Has hosted some soil days where the ERA scientists present their research findings to the group and demonstrate some of their new technologies in the hopes of increased stakeholder awareness of soil health and how that might help adaptation in the future to certain events. Another good example, I think, comes out of the Northern Plains Climate Hub. This is GrassCast. It's a tool that was developed in cooperation with Colorado State University and University of Arizona, and they were using precipitation and net primary productivity relationships to then create projections. They were working with the National Weather Service as well, creating projections of grazing, so to support livestock grazing, basically productivity support livestock grazing, with the impact hopefully being risk reduction and profitability increases over time. And the third example comes from my friends at the Midwest Climate Hub. There was early spring this past year, and they did a series of webinars and information related to agriculture and sort of assessing the impacts from people on the ground across the region, and then also talking about what could be done and what those impacts were. So with that, we're moving forward. We're coming together with our Forest Service partners. We have a meeting next month, and we're coming up with a better communications plan. Again, as I said, we're 3 years old, so we're still putting pieces in place. I should mention that we really, I don't know if you noticed in these, but we really partner a lot in everything we do, particularly with Cooperative Extension, and but also with a lot of other partners to do the work that we do, because we're pretty nimble, usually four people per hub, so we're a pretty small organization. So these are my contacts, and I'll leave you with that.
Plenty of time for questions. We can go ahead and give the applause. I saw people going up. Plenty of time for questions.
Okay. Anybody have any questions? Yes, sure.
So what, can you describe some of the collaborations you have with Extension, some of the different things you've done specifically with Extension staff?
Yeah. This is different across the entire network. I'll speak from the Southwestern perspective. So we in the Southwest, one of the first things we did was that we gave small amounts of money to our Extension partners at land-grant universities in each of the states that we work in. And basically said, use this for climate services in whatever way that you think that needs to be done. And from that evolved some pretty strong partnerships with the Extension, co-application for some NIFA grants to host a regional workshop where there were six climate extension agents brought in to talk about the needs for materials that could be shared across the network. The needs for, now what has evolved is actually an e-newsletter that we put together with help from them that goes out, it's sort of created by those climate extension agents but goes to a much broader network. So I think that, which we facilitated in finding the money to do, but was really, I would say Mike Crimmins and a few other Extension agents really pushed that forward. You know, it was a team effort. That's what I'm trying to say. Yeah.
Any other questions?
Yeah, Sean.
Most of the work that you described seemed like it was a tool and technology development. Could you describe any social science work that the club or the network is conducting or part of?
Yeah, I think the network really recognizes that is something that we need to get into more. And so I can speak from my own perspective because I personally did some work with a social scientist, but we're still reaching out and trying to figure out how to do that. So we worked with some ranchers in California pre and post drought, and with a social psychologist to try to understand resilience and some of the decision-making processes that happened during a longer term drought, and presented that work at the AGU conference. But we're still figuring out how to do that, effectively work with social scientists to understand decision making processes. Yeah.
Let's again thank our speaker.